The University Tower Chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, it's Dan Maggio.
Oh, hey, Matt.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
We kind of been doing it every night.
There aren't as many choices. I would like to see them convert some summer sports into winter sports and kind of balance out the load.
Like,
it's overload in summer. You can't possibly keep up. But the winter is just sort of a noticeable reduction in options.
That's a good question.
Well, you could do shot put in the winter. Why not? Maybe shot put on skates.
Or how about like skeleton with biathlon? Oh my gosh. My kids are obsessed with the luge.
Yeah,
the bobsled. They just love it.
I like the skeleton.
Skeleton is pretty fun to see. Yeah.
It's like bobsled, skeleton, and luge are just the same thing, except when skeleton and luge, you're like just one person and you're on
upside down.
Upside down or facing forward to your death.
Yes.
Yeah.
You might turn into a skeleton at the bottom. Clearly, Jim has been watching the Olympics too because you were watching men's figure skating last night.
Yeah, like the snowboard cross. No, that's mess. That is one big hot mess.
We watched
run into one another and all crash, and then whoever's left goes over.
The worst is if there's enough people that crash, the poor guy has got to climb back up the hill, and hopefully he's got enough momentum to finish.
Too.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Because there's that first one I saw, the American guy crashed. He was like sixth place, but he was the only guy to finish. I think there's only three finishers. The other three never finished.
Well, in the final, men's final, the two Americans were part of the same crash.
Yeah.
And that made them 4 and 5.
It happens.
The end.
Yeah.
Professor Kendra Evans, your daughter's interested at all?
You know, Juliana shows an interest in curling
and
a variety of sports, and Autumn shows zero interest. She doesn't understand why we're not only watching cartoons at all times.
Who's that cool white tiger mascot that's kind of at some of the events?
Nothing would draw her interest.
I think you should point out that curling could become a cartoon. I mean, you could turn it into that.
You'd have like Mickey and Minnie.
Yeah, Mickey and Minnie throwing a stone.
We really have struggled to convince her. I mean, any movie, even children's films that are not animated, she just cannot appreciate them. It's different than when I grew up. It's because you can watch any cartoon on demand when you want it.
That's true.
She just doesn't understand
why
all
things aren't animated. It's not as valuable as it once was, the commodity.
That's right. I was thinking of what you and I were discussing coming into the building, and I'm wondering if there's a market for like mixed doubles curling cartoon, but they solve mysteries at the same time, or something like that. Or crimes, or you know,
and they have a dog, and he talks like Scooby Doo.
Oh my god!
Dan, do we need to put like a moving target?
I'm not really sure that would be good TV watching. But anyway, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Well, you're not four.
Yeah, I'm not four.
They went to the on-site Olympic shop at one of the places in Pyeongchang, and they had stuffed curling stones, like as a memento you could buy. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Continuing around the table, Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Now that we're actually getting into hockey, I know you're definitely ramping up.
Yes,
when it comes
but we are also a house divided.
Because she's U.S.
My wife is U.S. and I'm Canadian.
Of course.
And God forbid we start talking about the women's game that was on the other night. So.
Yikes. Yeah, that's right. Canada pulled it out, right?
Yep.
Yes.
2-1.
Oh, man. So, well, you know.
And there was a fight at the end.
There's always a fight between those two teams. I mean, they see one another constantly through all the tournaments over the years. It gets ugly.
So, yes, it does. We are lamenting in the chemistry department because since our renovation in 2012, we've had these two, they don't look very recent now, but LCD TVs in our lobby, and we've always put on the Olympics just playing in the background. We no longer receive the channels where we can watch the Olympics on a daily. We don't even get the CBC on campus.
Couldn't you guys just put in like an antenna and just pick up the free signal?
I believe that's where we're going because we've always watched the women's and the men's hockey final if possible.
Why?
Yes, you can. With a digital, you have to get the converter.
Yeah, you
can't
plug the antenna
because our TV doesn't. We can't get channel 9.
I don't get it in my office. I have a converter up there.
Really?
You're close to the city.
So what happens? You just no
you
signal.
Get channel 9. Do you have a TV without cable?
No, I don't.
Actually. I know that's an odd question.
No. We have done this, but I don't know if you can get every channel. I think the channels have to broadcast.
Hey, we don't get 9. Yeah. I can't pick up 9.
Really?
What's 9? What is 9?
Well, I think it's CBC.
Not off air.
Oh, I wouldn't know.
Is it 99 maybe?
I don't know.
We'll check that out.
Well, it is on all day on NBC Sports Network, but that's not a common channel, so... Anywho, enjoying the Olympics this time around, and sitting there as one of our guest panelists is Professor Lorenzo Mayo.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm not actually a real professor.
Yet.
You fooled us all this time?
Yes.
Wow.
But you like wearing sports jackets and...
Yes, I like watching the Olympics.
Talking about technical stuff like dinosaur anatomy and stuff like that.
No, I don't talk about that.
You used to all the time.
Yeah, but...
Loves dinosaurs.
They got footage of you. You're doomed.
The only thing I know about dinosaur anatomy is, like, what's inside T-Rex, and that's pretty easy.
That's a lot of stuff.
It must be grizzly.
It's a lot of guts. It's a lot of guts. No, let me tell you.
What's inside the guts must be grizzly.
Well, tell you what, listeners, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win an autographed photograph of the Ask the Professor panel and the ATP mug. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win a prize, too. The autograph photograph. Send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp or find us on Facebook. We have a random set of questions sent in. These are from anonymous. They're from miscellaneous topics, but the key thing is they are all from newspaper articles of the last 2 weeks. So if you've been paying attention to local and regional news, maybe national news, maybe international news, maybe galactic news, you should be able to answer these.
Interstellar
news. In 2014, the Girl Scouts in the great state of Colorado were prohibited from selling cookies in front of three different kinds of businesses. Can you name one of
them? Marijuana.
Pot stores.
Pot stores.
Gyms.
Nope.
Doctor's offices?
Mm-mm.
Dennis?
Salvation Army?
Elementary schools?
No. The other two are...
the Boy Scouts?
Bars.
Bars.
And liquor stores.
Liquor stores.
For the record, by 2018, the prohibition has been abandoned, so they may sell Girl Scout cookies wherever they wish.
I would think you could make big bucks in front of a pot shop. Oh, yeah. I mean, really, the munchies.
I bet you could. I'm anxiously awaiting the delivery of the Evans girls.
When do they come? I ordered a whole bunch from a friend. When do they come?
Ours are tomorrow, but some people already have them.
Yeah, some people already have them.
It's all very new to me.
You got the slow pipeline then.
I can't even eat them.
Yeah.
I like them.
Well, we'll approach you next year.
The peanut butter, is it the Trefoils? The peanut butter sandwich cookies? Dozy-dos, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I like the mint ones.
I can't eat them.
And Samoas all the way through.
I really like them all. They're so good.
Tagalongs.
Oh, yeah, those are really
good. Those are chocolate peanut butter.
You guys are killing me. I haven't had lunch.
I also ordered some of the, newer ones. I think they've been around in recent years, the s'mores-looking ones. Yes. Those look really, really good. Speaking of the Olympics, in Pyeongchang, South Korea marked a first-time change in the music used by singles or pairs figure skaters. What was the change?
They didn't have to be classical?
They had Latin.
Not classical, not pop.
Latin?
Nope.
Bluegrass is okay.
Didn't somebody play skated to the Beatles?
Ah, but therein lies the actual correct response here.
The Beatles?
No.
Rock music?
It says here that the music could include lyrics for the first time. It didn't just have to be instrumental.
Oh, yeah. I did hear some Despacito.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, every single one of the people in the program that I watched, no matter what country they were from, were skating to American music. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I've noticed that they seem to be more, I don't know, what's the word, graceful when they're skating to something that has a three-quarter time beat.
Yes, no, that is true. That is true. Despacito, not so much.
I did see one U.S. skater with, she chose a Korean selection.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right. Well,
that was very polite.
When in Rome, when in
Pyeongchang.
That's
right.
Or one station called it P.F. Chang's.
Called what?
They called it P.F. Chang's by mistake.
Oh, what?
Whoops.
Some newscaster Pyeongchang. Called it P.F. Chang's. P.F. Chang's.
You mean this is the city?
Yes.
Oh, for it's really God. Embarrassing.
The United States is the world's largest importer of bananas, with about 40% coming from what country?
South America, yeah. Somewhere. Brazil,
Argentina.
Somewhere. Mexico?
Central America?
Honduras.
Africa is a continent.
Oh, yeah. Honduras. Well, I was on continents. Didn't narrow it down.
Are we in Latin America, South America?
It's Latin America.
Ecuador.
Panama.
Venezuela.
Guatemala.
Guatemala, however, is not the world's largest producer and exporter of bananas. That country would be at the equator.
Ecuador
is the largest exporter of banana. Oh, banana. Let's see. Wilson A. Bentley was the first photographer to capture the image of this naturally occurring phenomena. What is it?
Niagara Falls.
The Northern Lights.
Not Niagara Falls.
The naturally occurring
Grand Canyon.
If needed, give a hint. It is often used as an inspiration for jewelry. Doesn't have a year, so I'm sorry, I can't give you like a specific. The first photographer who got this
something
image.
About a waterfall.
It's a water related. Partial credit.
Fountain.
Snowflake.
Snowflake is what it is. Yes. Oh. If another hint is needed, try this to speak about how recent this is. In February 2018, Detroit Mercy closed due to an abundance of this phenomenon.
It wasn't his name, Snowflake Bentley.
No, Wilson Bentley.
It was a
nickname.
Yeah, but his.
Oh, maybe his nickname.
Yeah,
you never know.
Probably.
You never know.
Yep.
There's a book about him.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
He's well-read.
Well, you're going to have to show me this book.
He too is well-read.
Documentation.
I don't have it.
Who replaced iconic saxophonist Clarence Clemons in Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band after Clemons' 2011 death?
It's not like a Bruce Hornsby, was it?
No.
Was it his son?
I mean, I'm giving you partial credit. It actually ended up being his nephew. His nephew took over. The source cited here is AARP, the magazine.
No, it's not. Yes. Are you serious?
No, I mean, they've got decent journalism.
That magazine.
That's fake news.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
I'm still in denial. Every time I get one, I still shred it. So.
What East Coast theater troupe, after nearly 175 years of allowing only male actors, recently announced casting will be open to performers of all genders?
Hasty Pudding Club?
The Hasty Pudding. Yes, Harvard's theatricals, known as the Hasty Pudding. That's from the New York Times back in January. Hasty Pudding. It just rolls off the tongue. I love it.
Yes.
You like pudding, Enzo?
No.
What kid doesn't like pudding?
I don't like pudding.
Well, for the Brits, pudding basically means any dessert.
That is also
yeah.
true. But you really don't like chocolate pudding or anything?
No, I don't like pudding.
You've never had a pudding cup?
I have had a pudding cup before.
And you didn't like it?
No, I didn't. I don't like chocolate pudding.
Do you like banana pudding?
Butterscotch?
No.
What about vanilla pudding?
No, I don't like any kind of pudding.
You guys talking food.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
We're really
too.
Hurting Dave here. We're really hurting Dave. In the genre of murder mysteries, there's a lineup of women writers who are easily identifiable if one is given the name of the main investigative character. Following is a list of those characters. Identify the author who created each crime fighter. Stephanie Plum. This is going to be rough.
The only two I know. Agatha Christie or P.D. James.
That's the name of the character that solves crimes.
Let's see. First name, same as an associate dean in the College of Health Professions.
Christine. Oh, she's not social.
No.
And a few of the letters from Kendra's last name. This is way too difficult.
Ava?
It's Janet Ivanovich.
Ivanovich.
People
okay.
do like her. Yeah.
Yeah, she sells a lot of books.
Yeah.
How about Rizzoli and Isles? Who invented Rizzoli and Isles?
Oh, good.
Is that it?
Yeah,
I didn't even know that was a.
I didn't know it was a novel. They're
books.
Yeah, a book series. Mm-hmm.
Initials T.G. First name, same as of the Dubervilles.
Tess.
Nope.
And I've got nothing for the last name.
I've got
and
nothing.
We don't have anything
for the last name either.
Tess Gerritsen. We'll look it up while we take a break. We are back. We're going to try to give these questions from Anonymous a little bit more work. How about Kinsey Milhone? Authoress, initials SG.
Stephanie?
Nope.
Sarah?
Nope.
Sally?
Actually, this is
Sue
the
Grafton.
Only one. It was Sue Grafton. It's the only one on the list that I knew. And how about V.I. Warshawski? That's actually SP are the initials.
Stephanie.
And the first one is Sarah.
Sarah.
Peterson.
Peterson.
No, Sara Paretsky.
I was close.
That was a disaster of a subcategory.
Our apologies.
Mm-hmm. We all know that the American flag is made of the colors red, white, and blue. What specifically do each of the colors represent?
Red, the blood of the patriots.
And the white is the healing, is it?
Is it valor or something like that?
Purity. No, actually, it says red is valor. Red is that valor. Fits with okay. what you said.
And then
across the sea.
It is not. Think back white, to where like, we got these colors from. We got them from France.
Oh.
Yeah, so blue was...
Let's see if Enzo's Michigan history class is going to help here.
Fraternity, equality, liberty.
Yeah. Tubor. Red is valor. White is... purity, and blue stands for
loyalty,
justice.
I kept on thinking red and white.
Only one U.S. state observes 14 of June as a formal state holiday. We know it as Flag Day nationally, even though not many people celebrate it. What state is that?
Rhode Island?
It is not.
Maryland.
Mm. Pennsylvania.
Maine? Pennsylvania is what it says. The great state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Great state. Maryland,
you Erie folks.
Yep.
Given the history. Mm-hmm.
One of the legendary baseball announcers of all time, he was at the All-Star game this year, is Vin Scully. For what team did he call their games?
The Dodgers.
Dodgers.
The Dodgers. LA. That's right. And who was the president of the U.S. when Scully began as the announcer? Mm-mm.
Oh.
JFK?
Mm-mm.
Roosevelt? Johnson?
Yeah.
No.
Nixon.
Man with no middle name.
Truman.
It was Truman. Truman.
Oh, was that
Harry?
Yeah, when Vince Scully started.
On radio.
Okay. Yeah, on the radio, that's right. When Scully spoke of the breeze on the field, he used a synonym for the word breeze. What term did he use?
Cheese? Because breeze is a kind of cheese?
No, that is a good analogy, but that's not it. It's a very, very rarely used word that starts with the letter Z.
Zephyr?
A zephyr. Whoa. A zephyr. The zephyr across the field.
You don't hear that in sentences very often.
Mm. No, you don't.
The last time I remember a zephyr being used,
the car. The train.
Yeah, the car. Yeah, because I remember I drew that half a dozen times. So. Yeah.
And, of course, the train during the 30s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It says, this is awesome trivia, by the way, Scully always called games by himself with no, as they say, color commentator. He was famous for using long stretches of silence to mark momentous events that he observed. Following are three such events that he called live. Identify how long his silences lasted. Kirk Gibson's home run in the 1988 World Series.
3 minutes, 45 seconds.
No, he was silent for about 1 minute.
Oh.
Almost 1 minute. How about Hank Aaron's 715th home run?
30 seconds.
58 seconds.
It's quite a bit more. It was 1 minute 45 seconds. Oh. Bill Buckner's error in Game 6 of the 86 World Series.
Ooh, that one I can't imagine lasting too long.
Actually, it's the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah,
he was silent. Because
he couldn't think of anything to say.
What do you say about the poor guy?
I tell you what you do. You shut up for 3 minutes and 23 seconds.
Wow.
He just let the crowd.
On air? Oh, he let the crowd's
noise. He let the crowd fill in. That's what Ernie Harwell used to do, too.
Yeah.
So what, can you describe the error? Because it sounds interesting.
It went right through his legs.
And they lost the game. They lost the series because of that?
3 minutes and 20 seconds.
I mean, a hit to him?
Yeah, I mean, a routine dribbler down first base and went right through his legs.
Yep.
Poor guy. And here we are still telling this story.
Did he ever come back on the field again?
Oh, yeah.
But did they pelt him with hot dogs and beer?
Oh, I don't know if Heather was here, she'd probably
cotton candy.
Groan.
Oh, she she would remember.
She probably remembers every moment of
that. Did you see her Valentine's Day gift?
She got a cool baseball card.
Wade Boggs.
Yeah,
who
I wasn't sure whether she got that for El Fresco or
I think El Fresco got it for her.
Okay,
yeah. As of 2017, this is it, Enzo. This whole set of shows you've been a part of us with, everything comes to this for you.
Okay.
In 2017, how old was the state of Michigan?
In 2017?
In 2017.
No pressure?
I think I know.
150 years old.
Close. It's 180 as of the year 2017. 180 years.
State of Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, I was close.
Detroit celebrated its 300th.
That was a few years ago.
I was going to say 300.
Yeah, I remember when I was in school, I did the sesquicentennial poster for the state of Michigan.
So 1837.
That's right. Michigan has a Pledge of Allegiance. to its state flag, written by one Harold G. Coburn. In what year was it adopted by the Michigan legislature as the official pledge to the Michigan flag?
1839.
No, it was quite a bit more recent.
1957.
Even recenter.
1973.
1972 is what it says here, right before I was born. Bonus points if you can recite it, but no. None lost if you can. Nobody should know this.
Nobody knows this.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of Michigan and to the state for which it stands, two beautiful peninsulas united by a bridge of steel where equal opportunity and justice to all is our ideal. It's actually kind of nice.
That's Hallelujah. A nice ideal. That is we worked harder at it.
The University of Michigan has not always been situated in the great city of Ann Arbor.
No.
When and where, we'll take a year and a location, was it founded?
1817.
It was Detroit. It was downtown Detroit, wasn't it?
It was Detroit in 1817. Yeah, so between you and Kendra, we figured it all out. They had their super-duper bicentennial. What was
I wasn't around for that.
Last year.
Did they come to Detroit to celebrate?
They probably stayed out there. Okay. Why?
I don't know. Because you'd come back to where your roots were.
What year did it move to Ann Arbor, do you know? It was another year that ended in 7.
1847?
1837. Moved to Ann Arbor. Pretty interesting. Wow. California had a gold rush, Enzo, in 1849, but Michigan had a rush of its own in the Upper Peninsula in 1843. What were they looking
Iron.
For?
Iron.
Copper.
Oh. They're looking for copper.
To I don't Coleman know if falls, you can
my
just
tuition
sift
dollars
it.
Are paying off right now.
What if you can? You
the water's orange up there.
I've never been there. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been to the Sioux, but never ventured west.
There is a characteristic of the national roadway system created in 1911 by Edward Hines, the Wayne County Road Commissioner. What is it?
Characteristic of the lines. Roads.
Yes, he was the first person who painted lines on the road in 1911. Hines Drive.
Yep.
Hines
the
Drive.
The scariest, floodingest road in all of Metro.
The most
Detroit.
Beautiful.
I mean, most
it's very
scenic tour. Yes. Oh,
yeah, great,
so
great
beautiful.
For the holidays.
When you get to drive on it.
When you get to drive on it.
Right. Didn't he also have some responsibility? Wasn't he? He did the first concrete or cement stretch of Woodward, something like that.
Oh,
he was like
ooh,
he.
Really?
I think he has some more
that
history
was way
than
before that.
I know, but I think he had something to do with that.
I don't know.
Sorry,
we got to check Hines'
Dan,
history.
Dan, do you remember that this pains us? This is one of those historical tour questions that we muffled, remember?
Oh, downtown.
Yeah, we bungled that one. We weren't sure whether it's between 5 and 6 mile, 6 and 7 mile,
yes.
7 and 8. Remember, we bungled that one.
You're right.
I drive by that historic marker every day, so I'll check it out the next time.
Look
I,
for the name Hines. See if it's there.
Speaking of really, really interesting and relevant trivia, in 1942, the first Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise was established. In which state did that happen? Kentucky.
Utah.
It was Utah, 100% Utah.
How do you know that?
Because I'm from Kentucky and my cousins are from Utah and there was a big argument.
Oh.
No,
was it the original, famous original?
What, was it Dave Thomas, though? Who? Does it say
no,
who
Colonel
opened
Sanders.
It?
No,
no, but who opened the first franchise?
Oh, it doesn't say. No, you're right, because Dave Thomas was a KFC.
Yeah, he was a KFC.
I'm not sure. It may
Before
have been.
Or he did Wendy's.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, this is wild. This was just in the Detroit Free Press this last December. The term white lie was thought to have come into English language about 1741. Recently, however, a team of transcribers working with the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, and the Oxford English Dictionary in the UK found an even earlier usage of the term. What do we now believe was the earliest year that this term was used to describe a habit of not telling the whole truth?
1564.
1567.
Oh,
I'll
that
give
was
it.
So
wow.
good.
Nice.
Dan Maggio is buying lottery tickets for all of us now. So.
Wow.
Don't follow me into the water. I never win.
Oh, my gosh.
During
that's
the
awesome.
Reign of Elizabeth I.
Oh. I think you can show about her.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. There are 4 national lakeshores administered by the National Park Service, and they're all the Great Lakes. Name the largest of these lakeshores and the number of acres it encompasses.
Sleeping Bear Dunes?
That's not the largest one. It's not the smallest one either, which is the next question. So you got one of the 4 knocked off.
One of the small, what, Isle Royale?
Mm-mm.
Oh. Would it be the UP on the Superior?
Yeah, the UP on the
This is definitely, if I know my geography correctly, this is Lower Peninsula.
Okay. Wait, can you repeat the question?
There are four national lakeshores registered by the National Park Service, and they're all basically in Michigan.
What, like Sutton's Bay or Grand Traverse?
You see a sign when you're driving. It says, welcome to the National Lakeshore. The first one is 73,200 acres. We call it Pictured Rocks.
Okay. Oh, that's what
which
I was...
is on the new quarter, by the way.
What's the one going up? Was like Tawas? Is that the Grand Circle?
Or? That may be one of the other ones, but it says the smallest one is 15,000 acres. It's called Indiana Dunes, which is quite a bit further south.
Okay. It's so up by Michigan City beautiful. Down there. Exactly. I love Indiana Dunes.
Oh, I'm sorry. And here's the list. My bad. The other two are Sleeping Bear and Apostle Islands, which is actually on the Wisconsin side. So,
oh yeah, I know where those are. Yeah, they're actually right over by Minnesota, Wisconsin.
We're looking at the map. That's enough of a distance away for us to not know what the Apostle Islands are.
Yes.
One more question, folks. Usually, Sports Illustrated puts athletes on its covers, or sometimes a Hollywood celebrity. The July 20th, 1964 cover, however, featured an actress, but she was dressed as a football player. Who is the actress?
64.
The hint is she was promoting her new vehicle, a comedy titled John Goldfarb, Please Come Home. This is wild. I've never heard of this.
Joan
before.
Rivers or somebody like that?
I mean, you're in the wheelhouse of that
Phyllis
era.
Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, keep going.
Betty White.
Initials S.M.
Shelley, no.
I'm going to avoid all the S names. Just for
Sarah.
You guys.
Stephanie.
S.M. Huh?
Very, very funny lady. Longtime Hollywood actress, for sure.
Shirley MacLaine.
On the cover of Sports Illustrated. Oh, that is a piece of trivia for the ages.
Now, she was hawking her book, was it?
She was hawking her new comedy, John Goldfarb, Please Come Home. Yeah, so I...
So this is... Okay, all right. I question nothing.
Yeah, that's...
I know better.
Hilarious.
Sports Illustrated does get interesting at times.
Sometimes I wonder, after all the parody that in my life, like Simpsons and South Park, that I've enjoyed, and I see something titled John Goldfarb, Please Come Home. I don't know what's more hilarious, truth or parody. That is pretty funny stuff. So, yeah, I guess I understand that, sadly, for all of our listeners, this year, Kate Upton, Mrs. Verlander, will not be on the cover of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. So,
But there was actually a clip of her online. She's standing on a rock and a wave knocked her down.
That
on
sounds the treacherous. Or
TV. It was. I mean, her crew went and fished her out of the drink. It was pretty ugly.
Mrs. Verlander, though, please. Mrs. Verlander.
Oh, yeah, the Mrs. So.
There you go. Oh, it's time for us to say goodbye. It just goes so fast when you're having fun. Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Enzo.
Hi.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Jim.
Goodbye.
Everything's getting messed up. Professor Maggio.
Goodbye. Thank you.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Miles.